is just a little bit after 6 p.m. here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM Radio. My name is Ben. This is the program where we're at. I am live in the studio. Excuse me. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air or solely those of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. That little track tune you heard was Al Green and Otello Anderson Quintet, Mr. Lucky, Dr. Odious Williams the Third, Jody Christian, John Whitfield, Lindrio Lopez Variety is the name of the album. The tune was All the Things You Are. It's a little Chicago jazz to start the show. Some kind of house cleaning. We are here at WEFT. We are fundraising to replace our WEFT antenna. We've been doing a WEFT antenna repair fundraiser, and there is an update. Through your generous donations, WFT was able to raise $10,000 we needed to get the additional $10,000 match. That $20,000 will be a long way to go to help with the extensive repairs to the WFT transmitter. That $20,000 will be a long way to help with the extensive repairs to the WFT transmitter and antenna, but the work's not done. The cost of repairs has now surpassed $30,000, and if you're listening to 90.1 FM, you know that there is a lot of noisy static on our broadcast. The diagnosis and fix for that static problem, unfortunately, still needs to be done. So in short, the WFT Tower Power 2025 fundraiser is still continuing and will continue. If you haven't yet contributed, please consider going online and donating today. Go to weft.org and click the blue Donate Now button. Thank you very much to all of our listeners. And, you know, we are a volunteer-run station, so we are running and we've been able to keep going, you know, all these years because of our listeners those who donate to us, and we're very grateful for us. We just need it's just one of those times where we really need our listeners and donors, supporters help. So yes, if you can donate, please do so. We thank you very much here at WEFT Champaign. Let's see, if you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of, you can donate any old vehicle to Charitable Adult Rides and Services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. Make arrangements on the website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. And of course, remember to tell them that you want WFT to receive the proceeds. And as always, there's stuff happening at the Rose Bowl Tavern, music, trivia night, all that, comedy shows, stand-up, all that happening. If you want to know what's going on at the Rose Bowl in Urbana, go to www.rosebowltavern.com. You can also probably just go to Google Rose Bowl, Urbana, Illinois, and that will take you there. Weather is pretty not much going on special in weather. Looks like there will, doesn't look like there'll be any rain as far as I could tell now. Knock on wood. I mean, unless if we need, I think we've had quite enough rain, so I don't know if farmers out there need, but I don't know. But right now it's 60 degrees. It'll get down to the 50s, possible about 49 late tonight into early tomorrow morning, 49, 48 around 5 a.m. tomorrow. Then it'll get up to the 60s, all the way up to in the 60s tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. when you're getting up tomorrow morning, all the way up into the 70s. Into around 2 p.m., 72, 6 p.m., so 24 hours from now. And then it'll drop down into the 60s. Other than that, nothing that stands out from, according to the forecast. Doesn't look like there'll be any rain this week. Mostly, maybe just partly clouds. Wednesday, mostly cloudy Wednesday, 78 the high, 48 the low. And then Thursday, 71 the high, 43 the low. And then Friday, 70 the high, 44 the low. We'll do one quick little shout out to the Champaign Regional Planning Commission. They are a people-focused agency made up of over 100 programs designed to generate possibilities for all within the Champaign County community. They have things like homeless prevention, rent assistance, homeless services, low income home energy assistance, mobile home initiative, safety, lightning, and energy efficient program, also known as SLEEP, senior services, summer cooling program. They have something called LIHEAP, low income home energy assistance, which that's still available. That usually ends about, you know, this time of the year, unless they extended it. But there is, since we are getting now sort of into summer, even though not quite summer heat yet, although we're getting there. You know, up in the 70s, and it has gotten to the 80s, but there is a summer cooling program. All this information can be found at, all these programs and information can be found at the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, ccrpc.org. And there are, you know, regular business office business days, office hours, 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. Monday through Friday. Their phone number, 217, this is for the Champaign Regional Planning Commission, 217-328-3313. There was an event about protesters organized at the Alma Mater statue on Friday for what has been happening in Gaza. This was a protest for Palestine. I got a little bit of audio, and I got one speaker who I thought I would play for you all for what they said. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. This is some of the rally for Palestine this past Friday.
From the river to the sea!
From the river to the sea!
Palestine!
Palestine will be free.
We are gathered here today at a time of urgency. What is happening in Gaza as we speak is a catastrophe, a genocide unfolding in real time. Tens and thousands of Palestinians have been and are being murdered. Entire families, bloodlines erased, journalists targeted, aid workers bombed, health facilities destroyed, schools and universities flattened, tents bombarded and humans being burned alive. Over a million people are purposefully forced into starvation and displacement. In other parts of occupied Palestine, tyranny is escalating. Arrests, settler raids, land theft, all being televised and live streamed for the world to see. This is not a conflict. This is not complicated. This is colonial violence, and it is being funded and enabled right here on our campus. Let's be clear. UIUC is complicit. Our university invests in corporations like Boeing, Raytheon, Lockheed Martin, companies that manufacture the weapons being used to massacre Palestinians. Our tuition dollars, our research partnerships, our silence, all fuel the Zionist military brutality, and that is completely unacceptable. And when students stand up and demand change, how does UIUC respond? With repression. They respond with anti-protest policies, arrests, surveillance, intimidation. International students had their visas revoked for absolutely no reason. Let me say that again. Students at this university were punished for using their voice, for exercising rights that should belong to all of us. What kind of university claims to value diversity and inclusion while trying to disappear and silence the very students who challenge fascism? And let's talk about these new protest policies. Policies that were not created in dialogue with students, but imposed on them. Policies that make it nearly impossible to speak out, to organize, for abusing their power to shield themselves from accountability. This is how institutions protect their investments in war and occupation, by criminalizing dissent. They relied on people like State Attorney Julia Reitz, who has chosen... to prosecute peaceful student protesters that have only practiced their right to protest. We ask, how is justice served when students are dragged into court for standing up against genocide? How is justice served if the youth are threatened the minute they speak? And while the university tries to crush our movement from the top down, we're seeing something else happen from the ground up. Students are rising. Faculty are rising. Community members are rising. Across the country, the movement is growing. The voices demanding an end to genocide, to occupation, to colonialism, they're only getting louder. And now, after years of being confronted by student organizing, and exactly a year after he ended negotiations with student protesters on bad faith, Chancellor Jones is stepping down. Let's not forget his legacy. Under his leadership, the university chose complicity. It chose to ignore our demands. It chose to banish organizers and treat them like enemies. And when we asked for divestment, he gave us censorship. When we asked for protection, he gave us punishment. It was announced that our university leaders have signed a letter urging the government to uphold the principles of free expression on our campus. Yes, you heard that right. Tim Colleen and Chancellor Jones, who wanted to tear gas their students and community members last year, are now appealing to the government to protect our freedom. To those hypocrites, we say, this is us upholding the very principles of free speech that you are helping the government diminish and criminalize. The rule. We will not be silent. We will not be intimidated. We are here to demand what is right. We demand that UIUC divest from weapons manufacturers and corporations that profit from the oppression of Palestinians. Yes. Yes. We demand an end to all policies that criminalize students, crush protests, and target international students. We demand transparency, accountability, and justice from our university, and we will not rest until we get it. Because we believe that divestment is possible. A world where universities stand on the side of justice. A world where Palestinian liberation is enabled by unwavering support. To every admin member watching us, to every trustee, to every donor, every politician who hopes this movement will die down. We are not leaving. We are not afraid. And we are unshaken. From the river to the sea.
From the river to the sea.
Palestine will be free.
Palestine will be free.
According to WCIA, back in March, University of Illinois student was facing a misdemeanor charge in addition to an original felony charge for her role in pro-Palestine protests on campus last April. So that would have been April of 2024. Champaign County State's Attorney, according to this piece by Gabriella Morando of WCIA, Champaign County State's Attorney Julie Wright said 9 people were charged after a U of I police investigation to the protest. She also said in many cases, defendants were charged with both the felony mob action charge and with misdemeanor resisting a peace officer. The new misdemeanor charge against this student could work in her favor if her case plays out similarly to other defendants who face the same charges. But yes, we'll see how more on this situation. I will report, try to cover as much as I can more. This was from a piece from WCIA from this event that you just heard from at the Alma Mater. Jack Crum from WCIA, about a year after ProPals that on their website just a few days ago, WCIA talked to one protester who did not want her name shared at the Chabad Center for Jewish Life on campus. Is some of the stuff that's been happening with protests here here in Champaign, and we'll see if I can get more perhaps people to talk about it here on where we're at on WEFT Champaign. But I'm going to now continue play a pre-recorded programming that I have. As we continue now, here it's about a little after 6:20 p.m. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker. They don't necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. This is the broadcast with Brad Freeman, and I'll be at wrap it up. When it gets close to the end of the hour, I'll wrap up things and transition into the next that 7 o'clock programming. So this is the broadcast with Brad Freeman.
And when the courage of our civic leaders wavers, when they fail to stand up for our country in its moment of greatest need, then we should remind them that cowardice always comes at a cost.
Excellent reminder, Governor Pritzker. Thank you.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
I that's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
No, it ain't.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
And there's no place I'd rather be stuck. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the broadcast as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and on dozens of other fine affiliate stations on both the airwaves and the internet around the country and the world, blanketing planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us for another thrilling edition of the Bradcast. We've got a lot to get to today, a lot going on as usual, and a number of updates to several stories that we've been following in recent weeks. So glad you can be here. Let me start here on our show yesterday on Donald Trump's 100th day in office. And yes, that was on Wednesday, not on Tuesday, as so many in the corporate media, Desi Doyen, inexplicably recognized the largely meaningless landmark, but on the entirely wrong day, which kind of continues to baffle me even today.
Yeah, it was weird, but you know, they're not all good at math. So, you know.
Do they have calendars? Can they count? 100 is not that high of a number. In any event, on our show, on Trump's actual 100th day of his second term in office, with Digby and Driftglass joining me, we discussed who we expected from Trump's cabinet to be thrown overboard first, given his absolutely dismal and plummeting poll ratings on just about everything at the 100-day mark. So, of course, he's got to blame someone for that. I suggested Pete Hegseth might be the first to go. Particularly after the pretty hilarious news this week that he was out crowing about axing a so-called woke Joe Biden initiative at the Pentagon regarding women and security. Turns out it was a policy, a law adopted by, yes, Donald Trump in his first term, and it was heralded by his daughter Ivanka as one of the crowning achievements of his first term. It was shepherded through Congress at the time by Trump's now DHS Secretary Kristi Noem, etc. That might have been the final straw after Hegseth's other headline failures, like sharing battle plans in an insecure signal chat with a journalist and with his wife and with his brother, etc. Digby thought it might be RFK Jr. For reasons that I'll let you discover on your own if you've yet to listen to yesterday's show. It's available for free thanks to listener support at bradblog.com. But today, Desi Doyen, it looks like we've got the answer to that question of who's going to be the first one thrown overboard.
Yes, we do.
Sort of. It's Mike Waltz. Who? Well, that is Trump's national security advisor. He's the guy who created the Signal chat group where Hegseth was sharing war plans with other high-ranking national security officials and the vice president and the editor-in-chief of The Atlantic magazine for some reason. For a reason that we still don't know, but it was Waltz who inexplicably invited Jeffrey Goldberg of The Atlantic into that group chat. And as The Times reports today, Trump is ousting his national security advisor, Michael Waltz, and another senior member of the White House foreign policy team, the first significant personnel overhaul of top aides in his second term. They report that Waltz had been on thin ice for months, but that the Signal chat seems to have been the straw that broke the national security advisor and former Florida congressman's back. Most of Trump's advisors had already viewed him reportedly as too hawkish to work for this president, who campaigned as a skeptic of American intervention, and that he was eager to normalize, that Trump is eager to normalize relations with Russia, to reach a nuclear deal with Iran, etc. Alex Wong, Waltz's deputy who worked on North Korea issues in Trump's first term and who's considered a moderate Republican with substantial national security experience, Well, that's going to cost you in the Trump White House. He is also expected to be removed, according to senior administration officials. Trump is making the change just 2 weeks before his first major trip abroad to Saudi Arabia and other Arab capitals in the Middle East. Waltz barely had time to organize a staff, notes the Times, much less tackle the hardest issues facing the president. Ordinarily, a new national security advisor writes the administration's national security strategy, which is typically a year-long process. But he won't be doing that, apparently. Now, on Thursday morning, just as word of his ouster was beginning to circulate, Waltz was appearing at that time on Fox News. It is unclear whether he knew that he was being thrown overboard, thrown under the bus at that point. But hey, at least he made it longer than Trump's first national security advisor from his first term. That'd be Michael Flynn. He was fired just 24 days after Trump's first inauguration. Waltz at least made it just beyond 100 days.
And doesn't appear that he's going to be prosecuted for, I don't know, foreign entanglement.
We will see. Yeah, you'll recall Flynn was a retired lieutenant general. He's then turned into a crazy QAnon loon. Maybe he always was that. I don't know. But he was supposedly fired at the time in the first term, Michael Flynn, because the administration claimed he lied to then Vice President Mike Pence about talks that he held with the Russian ambassador after Trump's election, but before he took office. In fact, Flynn also lied to the FBI about those conversations with Russians and was eventually criminally charged. He pleaded guilty to those charges, only to see those charges eventually dismissed at the end of Trump's first term before he was granted a full pardon, I believe. So Waltz did better than that. And to help him save face, apparently, late on Thursday, the Trump administration announced that they were going to name Waltz to a different job, to become his UN ambassador, while naming Secretary of State turned complete Trump stooge Marco Rubio. He will be named as acting national security advisor at the same time that he is Secretary of State. In his first term, Trump ran through four national security advisors. So we'll see how long the next guy, whoever that ends up being, is able to remain in that role. So there's that. And in an encouraging update to a story that we've been covering now for weeks, months, actually, last week, you may recall, I was delighted to report that a federal judge ordered the restoration of the 83-year-old congressionally mandated and funded Voice of America, the international news outlet that was created originally by the U.S. to counter Nazi propaganda in Europe. It had been broadcasting continuously since 1942 until Trump ordered its parent agency, the U.S. Agency for Global Media, to be shut down back in March, I believe. Some 1,300 VOA staffers and contractors were sidelined as the airwaves fell of both VOA and its sister networks, Radio Free Asia and Middle East Broadcasting and Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, fell silent after decades of what many regard as one of America's best projections of democracy and freedom of the press around the world, particularly with its broadcasts in more than 60 languages into authoritarian nations where real news is often entirely forbidden. And VOA and its sister networks have long served as a beacon to more than 400 million listeners around the globe each week. A number of VOA journalists and contractors filed suit, and as noted last week, the court ordered the U.S. Agency for Global Media to return employees and contractors from Voice of America, Radio Free Asia, and Middle East Broadcast Networks to their status as of pre-March 14, when they were all sent away. Even as Voice of America is not fully back as the administration is appealing that ruling. But also the court in that ruling had not yet restored Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty. But this week, the same federal judge who took action last week ordered the Trump administration to restore $12 million that Congress appropriated for Radio Free Europe, the pro-democracy media outlet at risk of going dark now for the first time in 75 years. U.S. District Judge Royce Lamberth, a very well-respected and 81-year-old conservative senior judge originally appointed by Ronald Reagan back in 1987, also, according to AP's coverage, tucked a lesson on the three branches of government inside his ruling this week, cautioning that the system of checks and balances established by the U.S. Constitution must remain intact if the nation is going to continue to thrive. Lamberth granted the order for the U.S. Agency for Global Media, USAGM, as it's known, to disperse money for April of 2025 for Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty pending the outcome of a lawsuit seeking to keep the station on the air. He said the Trump administration could not unilaterally revoke funding that was approved by Congress for this. Quote, he said, in interviews, podcasts, and op-eds, people from both inside and outside government have variously accused the courts, myself included, he wrote, of fomenting a constitutional crisis, usurping the Article II powers of the presidency, undercutting the popular will, or dictating how executive agencies can and should be run, he wrote. But those notions reflect a, quote, fundamental misunderstanding of the role of the federal judiciary and of the Constitution itself, the judge said. Reasonable people can reach different conclusions in complicated legal disputes like this, he wrote, and that's why the appellate courts exist. The administration could also ask Congress to pull back the funds, he noted. Attorneys for the media outlet say that Trump's administration has terminated nearly all of its contracts with freelance journalists, as we were actually among the first to report on this show during our interview on this program with Voice of America's chief national correspondent, Steve Herman, back in March, and missed payments on leases, they warned, would lead to more employees being furloughed, more contracts ending, if funding was not restored, forcing Radio Free Europe and Radio Liberty to cancel more contracts and its core live news broadcasting and reporting operations entirely, according to their lawyers, who say that Radio Free Europe would otherwise have to cease operations almost entirely by June. So now they got another month, it seems. Unlike Voice of America, which began during World War II, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty started broadcasting during the Cold War. Its programs are aired in 27 languages in 23 countries across Eastern Europe, Central Asia, and the Middle East. The judge explained he has no dog in this particular hunt. He has no animosity to the president nor loyalty to the media outlets. But by issuing the ruling, quote, I am humbly fulfilling my small part in this very constitutional paradigm, a framework that has propelled the United States to heights of greatness, liberty, and prosperity unparalleled in the history of the world for nearly 250 years. If our nation is to thrive for another 250 years, he continued, each co-equal branch of government must be willing to courageously exert the authority entrusted to it by our founders.
Hear, hear.
A good lesson, I should say, in how our Constitution is supposed to work. So we will take that as some good news for today. The courts are still holding, mostly, for now, in D.C. And, by the way, even today, deep in the heart of South Texas, where on Thursday, a Donald Trump appointed federal judge issued a first-of-its-kind ruling against Donald Trump and the administration, ruling that he unlawfully invoked the Wartime Alien Enemies Act to deport alleged Venezuelan gang members without due process, which the judge also blocked as of today. The federal judge on Thursday barred the Trump administration from deporting any Venezuelans from South Texas. In any event, under the 18th century wartime law, the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, and said invocation of it was, quote, unlawful. This is U.S. District Judge Fernando Rodriguez Jr. He is the first judge to rule that the AEA, the Alien Enemies Act, cannot be used against people who, the Republican administration claims, are gang members invading the United States. As we initially told you on this show way back in March, stepping through the actual text of the law in question from 1798, which allows U.S. officials to detain or deport migrants without due process, but only in the case of migrants coming from a nation that has declared war on the U.S., or in the case of an invasion directed by their country. And as far as anyone could tell, Venezuela has neither declared war on the U.S., nor has it directed an invasion of it, as the Trump administration seems to be claiming. Quote, neither the court nor the parties question the executive branch can direct the detention and removal of aliens who engage in criminal activity in the U.S., wrote Judge Rodriguez. But, he said, the president's invocation of the AEA exceeds the scope of the statute and is contrary to the plain, ordinary meaning of the statute's terms. Well, who knew? Oh, yeah, we did. In March, Trump had issued a proclamation claiming that the Venezuelan gang Tren de Aragua was invading the U.S. He claimed he had special powers to deport immigrants identified by his administration as gang members without the usual court proceedings, which are known as constitutional due process, a bedrock principle of our constitutional Republican democracy. The judge wrote, quote, the court concludes that the president's invocation of the AEA through the proclamation exceeds the scope of the statute and as a result is unlawful. There was no immediate comment from the White House, but the chair of the Congressional Hispanic Caucus, Rep. Adriano Espaillat of New York, said in a statement that the judge had made clear, quote, what we all knew to be true. The Trump administration illegally used the Alien Enemies Act to deport people without due process. The act has only been used three times before in U.S. history, always during wartime. Most recently, during World War II, it was cited to intern Japanese Americans at the time, shamefully. And by the way, it was used to detain or deport Nazis from the country, even though the Nazis were actually given due process of some 30 days to challenge their detention or deportation under the law, unlike the more than 200 alleged Venezuelan gang members, many of whom are apparently not even gang members, before they were sent off to a maximum security gulag in El Salvador back in March without access to attorneys, perhaps for life. Judge Rodriguez's ruling is significant because it's the first formal permanent injunction against the administration using the AEA and contends the president is misusing the law. It's also significant, of course, because it was issued by a judge that Donald Trump himself appointed to the federal bench back in 2018. So I guess he's not going to be able to call him a wild-eyed liberal and call for his impeachment, but I'm sure he'll come up with something.
Probably.
The ACLU attorney leading the response, Lee Gallant, said in a comment in response to the ruling, quote, the court ruled the president can't unilaterally declare an invasion of the United States and invoke a wartime authority during peacetime. Congress never meant for this 18th century wartime law to be used this way, he said. This is a critically important decision that prevents more people from being sent to the notorious Cecot prison. At least for now, at least in South Texas. Judge Rodriguez agreed with the ACLU here. Trump claimed that Trendaragua was acting at the behest of the Venezuelan government, but Judge Rodriguez found that the activities the administration accused it of did not amount to an invasion or a predatory incursion, as the statute requires. As the judge wrote, Trump's, quote, proclamation makes no reference to and in no manner suggests that a threat exists of an organized armed group of individuals entering the U.S. at the direction of Venezuela to conquer the country or assume control over a portion of the nation. Thus, the proclamation's language cannot be read as describing conduct that falls within the meaning of, quote, invasion for purposes of the AEA. Of course, if the administration appeals, which I suspect is almost certain they will, it would go to the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals in New Orleans, which is the nation's most right-wing appeals court. The Supreme Court itself has already weighed in once on the issue of deportations under the AEA. The justices held that migrants alleged to be gang members must be given, quote, reasonable time to contest their removal from the country. The court has not specified, however, the length of time that is considered to be reasonable, though a judge in Colorado, I believe, recently said that those held under the AEA must be given at least 21 days to challenge any deportation, while the administration has been trying to get away with giving them just 12 hours while in custody to find a lawyer and file legal challenges to their cases before trying to spirit them out of the country forever into a gulag in El Salvador. No matter what the Fifth Circuit does, however, the case is likely to head back to the high court again, though the Trump-packed court has already been forced to deal with one of these cases a second time on an emergency basis. Late last month, the justices stepped in the middle of the night, on a Saturday night after midnight, very unusual, but they ordered the halting of a bunch of new deportations to El Salvador from North Texas. They did so by a 7-2 ruling. Justices Alito and Thomas, naturally, were the lone dissenters. They would have shipped these people off to the gulag without any due process whatsoever. The court in that case said that there were to be no more deportations under the AEA until the Supreme Court rang in again on the matter. And for now, a Trump judge in South Texas has forestalled that possibility. Again, for now. All right, quickly before we get to a break, some encouraging news, not just coming from the courts today, as Nancy Levine Stearns, who's been following these sort of attempts by right-wingers to force major American companies to end anti-discrimination or DEI programs, she reports on Blue Sky that in a vote on Wednesday, Coca-Cola shareholders voted to reject two anti-DEI proposals at their annual meeting, both of them 99-1%. She notes that proponents of the proposals described Coke's anti-discrimination policies, described as a DEI, as, quote, anti-American, neo-racist, and neo-Marxist. Apparently, anti-discrimination is now Marxist. As the company and the shareholders opposed the proposal, they argued that such programs play an important part in Coke's success. They said Coke that diversity, equity, and inclusion play an important part in our company's success. But if Coke is now un-American, I don't know what to tell you. I wonder what they say about Levi Strauss at this point, but we don't have to wonder because Stern also reported about a week ago that Levi Strauss shareholders also voted to reject a similar proposal calling on the company to cease and abolish all DEI efforts. Levi's board of directors responded, saying, quote, "Diversity and inclusion principles are critical in ensuring that our products reflect and are relevant to our diverse global customer base." Good for them. All right. Even the most American of American companies, apparently, still have the courage, it seems, to push back against this nonsense. Though I do understand that Pepsi recently did the opposite, which, if true, is just another good reason, as if anyone needed one, to choose Coke over Pepsi. So have a Coke and a smile today, I guess. So let's take a quick break here. We'll come back with a couple of Democrats who already seem to be running for 2028 and are already pushing back themselves against both Donald Trump and some of their fellow Democrats. At least one of them is doing so against Democrats who may not be pushing back as hard as they should. That and Desi Doyen's Green News Report are all still ahead on today's broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener-supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Welcome back. It's the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Hey, former Vice President Kamala Harris, you've heard of her, right? She used a high-profile speech on Wednesday night to sharply criticize Donald Trump. Well, about time. That amid speculation about whether she's going to mount another presidential campaign in 28 or she's going to run for governor out here in California. In her most extensive public remarks since leaving office in January after her defeat to Trump, Harris said on Wednesday that she is inspired by Americans fighting Trump's agenda despite threats to their freedom or livelihood. And that's an important point. I have noted in the past that I do not look to Democrats for leadership. In many cases, I don't care what they do. I look to the people to lead those Democrats, those elected officials. And that's what the people have been doing, clearly. And Democrats like Harris have indeed noticed. And of course, they are now following the people. Before Wednesday, she had barely mentioned Trump by name since she conceded defeat to him in November. Harris chose a friendly audience for her return to the political arena, addressing the 20th anniversary gala for Emerge America, which is a group that recruits and trains Democratic women to run for office. Apparently, it came out of her own run for San Francisco district attorney back in the early 2000s. She praised Democrats in her remarks who have been especially prolific in criticizing Donald Trump, name-dropping lawmakers diverse in their ideology and style, like Senators Cory Booker, Chris Van Hollen, Chris Murphy, Bernie Sanders, along with members of Congress, Jasmine Crockett, Maxwell Frost, AOC. But she did not take a stand. In one of her party's central divides, as AP sees it, neither calling for mass mobilization like Illinois Governor J.B. Pritzker has, we'll get to him in a moment, or questioning Democratic positions on key issues like California Governor Gavin Newsom has been doing of late, as we discussed on our show yesterday with Digby and Driftglass a bit. In Harris's remarks, she spoke to the anxiety and confusion that have gripped many of her supporters since Trump took office, but she discouraged despair.
Instead of an administration working to advance America's highest ideals, we are witnessing the wholesale abandonment of those ideals. And what we are also seeing in these last 14 weeks is Americans using their voice and showing their courage. President Trump and his administration and their allies are counting on the notion that fear can be contagious. What they have overlooked is that fear is not the only thing that's contagious. Courage is contagious. The courage of Americans who are banding together in the face of the greatest man-made economic crisis in modern presidential history. The courage of Americans we are seeing who are rallying at Social Security offices to protect their hard-earned benefits. Of Americans who are speaking out to say, it is not okay to violate court orders. It is not okay to detain and disappear American citizens or anyone without due process. And we here know that when the checks and balances ultimately collapse, if Congress fails to do its part, or if the courts fail to do their part, or if both do their part, but the president defies them anyway, well, friends, that is called a constitutional crisis. And that is a crisis that will eventually impact everyone. Because it would mean that the rules that protect our fundamental rights and freedoms, that ensure each of us has a say about how our government works, will no longer matter. And if that happens, the one check, the one balance, the one power that must not fail is the voice of the people.
Former Vice President Kamala Harris in San Francisco on Wednesday night. So in a couple of recent roundtable shows with our OG blogger friends, Heather Digby Parton and Drift Glass, Drifty, who's an Illinois native, has cited his own state's governor, billionaire Democrat J.B. Pritzker, as someone that national Democrats should keep an eye on in advance of 2028. And yeah, I know it's early, but I've been actually finding it somewhat comforting of late to keep an eye on the far horizon and how we are going to get there. And Drifty actually knows a thing or two about this. Years ago, he was actually part of a group of Democrats who vetted some guy named Barack Obama for higher office back when he was running for Congress in Chicago back in 2000. Now, Obama lost that race at the time, but he went on to win election to the U.S. Senate 4 years later. Now, I don't know whatever happened to that guy after that, but J.B. Pritzker was in New Hampshire on Sunday, the Illinois governor, which is where you go to New Hampshire, along with Iowa. And, you know, you'll find many potential presidential candidates beginning to meet supporters in advance of potential presidential runs out there. Pritzker spoke at a Democratic fundraiser on Sunday where he, I believe, was the keynote speaker.
Yes.
I quoted some of his remarks on the show yesterday to get Drift Glass' response, and both he and Digby seemed to be very impressed with Pritzker. So I haven't been able to get to this in what's been another busy week for a change until today. But before it slips away, I think it's worth sharing some of his remarks in Manchester with you today, as they may be encouraging even before we get anywhere near the 2028 presidential primaries.
I'm going to have to end that there. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. Now, that wraps it up here at WEFT. Again, as I reminded, we are fundraising for the WFT Tower Power. We are trying to get past, I believe, $30,000. So if you can, go to our website, WEFT www.cityofdallas.org and click on the blue Donate Now button, whatever you can give. We are very grateful, again, to our listeners and to our listeners' supporters who have been supporting us for all these years. But that wraps it up here. Please stay tuned for more programming here on WFT 90.1 FM. This is The Poet Speaks by Ben Wolf. Thank you very much. Have a good night. Thank you.